This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be with Simon Sharma. I really do want an answer to, did you come to a conclusion as you were thinking toward a book that which of, was it Gladstone, was it John Stuart Mill, was it Jefferson? Those are really very distinctive ideas about freedom, and it plays directly into this book.
Well, I think it's a work in progress. I mean, that's why these histories are so bloody important.
I do too.
And I'm thinking, I was listening to you telling the story of how you came to this, thinking of Richard Slotkin, who's a historian, American historian, you probably know him.
Yes.
Who in
distressingly brilliant.
he will be very pleased that you said that. But he's written the study of American life, the American
culture.
Myth. And he says, his view is that Vietnam put the final nails in the American myth.
As
it had been. And that somehow or other...
There are no final nails, in my view.
We can come back to that. Yeah. His view is that any replacement has to deal with two things, violence and who gets to commit it in this society, and slavery, black people.
Yeah.
And in many ways, what you've done and others have done increasingly is pull us back to the myth we grew up with, the George Washington cherry tree view of American history.
Right. Which I increasingly think of as the lies that were perpetrated upon poor, innocent school children. But
well, and it's and really tough. I think they're just not the whole truth. I mean, sometimes it does teeter over into lies. And the issue, actually, we'll come back, I hope, to these different varieties of freedom, which is a very important issue for our times as well as book writing. But the issue about history is whether it's essentially, its first duty is feel good, is essentially to do the origins of our own cheerfulness, if indeed we are, or a way, in fact, to make us more cheerful. If we're distressed by the inadequacy of political leadership, doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum, we know a lot of people in this country are currently, what better than to actually find, especially at the kind of dawn of the country's founding, one moment where all our leaders seem to be wise, victorious, clever, and strong.
To give you a sense that it could happen?
Well, to give you a sense that we things may have gone off the rails since, but actually we had a perfectly blissful, apart from the small matter of the war, baptism, that we were created in truth and honour, really. Well, and that's not entirely wrong.
No, but it's also not entirely right.
It's not entirely right, Bill. Exactly. And the other view of history is the, the sort of view where you simply look in the mirror and say, aren't I wonderful, is classically, the view that dictatorships and sort of vain empires have. When the Roman Empire went downhill, it needed toadies instead of Tacitus. Totalitarian regimes, which thank God we are not, always want to have the entirety of history as leading to the wonderfulness of them. The opposite view, the truly democratic history, is the one that tradition began with Thucydides, all those, a story written by a disgruntled retired general about the terrible screw-up, about a war that went horribly wrong. Everything in his history of the Peloponnesian War leads up to this catastrophic debacle of the expedition to Syracuse. Mm-hmm. So how amazing to begin, to create the first great classic, Herodotus fine, but Thucydides is really the first great classic, as an exercise in brutally honest self-criticism. But that showed how grown up they already were.
I'm sorry.
No, that's history, I think, since then, in that tradition, it's not an emasculating muse, but it is a chastening and cautionary one.
Well, and to put it into modern, unfortunately modern terms, there is fact-based and there is faith-based. And if we're not, there's faith is a very important ingredient in a culture.
Yes.
However,
and in a life, one needs to have faith that the sun will come up. And
And a range of other things. It's part of how a culture holds itself together. Go back to this mythic piece.
Yeah.
But it also, if it becomes too separated from the facts, however those facts are presented, and one of the... I increasingly appreciate the work that people like you do to help dig out at least it may not be the facts, but at least a valid representation of a sequence of events that is coherent from which we can learn. And that seems to be very important.
That's our service industry. Yes.
that's what historians do, yes?
That's whatever the... You know, the oath that's not Hippocratic. That's what we've taken. Yeah.
But it's not hypocritical either.
Not hypocritically. Yeah. Well, no, that's what we try and do.
It's interesting to me that you talk about Thucydides as being mature, as being grown up, because one of the things that I kept thinking as I read Rough Crossings, that just to repeat, talks about the fact that slaves, when they heard the British are coming, that was good news to them, that there was freedom to be had. And I kept thinking the mark of maturity, I have been told, is the ability to hold two thoughts at the same time that are contradictory.
Right.
And that seemed to be, okay, maybe I can be more grown up as I think about my country. Right. And if I'm more grown up, maybe my country can be more grown up.
Absolutely right. That's a huge compliment. But I'll tell you a good story. When I was lecturing at Harvard, in the kind of Devonian age, a long time ago, I gave a very much two thoughts and one, you know, about the French Revolution, moments of promise and a huge amount of hideous tragedy. And a student came up to me, undergraduate, beautifully corn-fed, called Winthrop the Third something, and he said, "You know, Professor Sharma, my parents are not paying $25,000 a year in order for me to be more confused at the end of your lecture than I was at the beginning." And I said, "Yes, Winthrop, they are. It's called an education."
Yes. You know,
So complication without disillusionment, you know, learning strength, you know, sort of self-strengthening wisdom through complication is very, very definitely a good thing.
It also helps to kind of shape my sense of being skeptical, which I always need more of that, without being cynical. And
that's
again,
right.
I think that you've done a real service as you have told me these stories about the real American Revolution was happening in South America well before there was this tax revolt in North America. And I mean, just things to let me shift focus, let me look at it, the same picture a little new. Or newly, depending. Well, the other thing I thought you were going to say of Richard Slotkin is that he says when he can prove things as an historian, he writes his history. And when he can't prove it and knows it to be true, he writes fiction. And he did that with Abraham Lincoln, which I found an interesting other way to let me be thinking toward these big issues and still be really grounded in a perspective that is well-informed.
Mm. I'm slightly wary of thinking about a template of proof, really. I mean, history isn't, you know, even court verdicts, as we know, turn out to be provisional, a later date. Hello, DNA. But the notion of a finite proof that at some point in your research and in your writing, when some notional neon light goes on that says, you know, proof accepted, you know, you've done it, on to the next. And so I think history is much more, you know, looser, and the ends, that's why I think I got slightly carried away and did a little sort of poetic inscription before the coda of the book, which said precisely the opposite, that you sort of end history rather than tie it up, actually, almost never ties itself up. I think partly the reason I like this sense of a story which doesn't quite neatly get packed together, as you hope your readers will then take it on for themselves. There is a huge story which I, you know, just barely deal with in that just very last section, of how much was known by the early African-American political leaders like David, and writers like David Walker and the young Frederick Douglass, of this whole story, and how much did it kind of resonate. What we do know is the War of 1812 happens, and without any proclamations being issued by the British, the slaves are off and running again.
To the Brits.
To the Brits, and all the way to Canada. So some of this tradition clearly... So it would be wonderful if a reader took, you know, that and said, why don't we think about actually the way in which these two traditions of liberty were competing between sort of 1810, between the end of Jefferson's presidency and the Civil War, for instance. That's just for instance. That's why I don't like to.
And think of, you know, reading this, thinking about Amanita Forna, who wrote The Devil That Danced on the Water.
Yeah.
About Sierra Leone, about her father who was executed in Sierra Leone. The history is still alive. It's why that coda is so important, and your poetry is so important. It doesn't just end.
Right.
This is the story to this point.
Right.
But it has connections that are tentacles that reach out and that are touching people today.
And we're going to reach out and touch people today in a moment some more when we come back in just a moment with the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell, Simon Sharma, and I all invite you to be with us when we return.